So, David, you and I have been accused of being old souls. I've heard this 20 times over. I'm sure you, I know you have
also.
Who
says that? I want names.
And, but you know, people accuse old souls, and I don't really know exactly what that means. But one thing I think, my interpretation of it is that you and I derive a lot of great value from hearing the anecdotes, the stories of people older than us,
much
that have been there, much more experienced
than
us.
And Big Shot, right?
And that's exactly right. And this entire show is meant to be a celebration and an archival of those that came before us, the people whose shoulders we are standing on.
Absolutely.
But one thing that is also very important to us is family. And, you know, your family is a storied entrepreneurial family. My grandfather sold eggs in a farmer's market. My other grandfather was a peddler. But I, as you know, have this incredible relationship with my grandparents and my parents. And part of it is that I think the only way for you to do really great for the next generation is to know and understand what happened in the generations that come before you. You and I have this great reverence for those that came before us. We love their stories, their anecdotes. You want to hear their little jokes and their story about this one time where, you know, I was walking down the main in Montreal,
right.
And then I came over in the boat, landed in Halifax.
I cut the fabric in half.
And I think one of the things that we love doing, and maybe that's part of us being old souls, is that we have this great love, admiration, and deep respect for our parents and grandparents and the platforms and the lives they've given us so that we can go and build our own companies.
Absolutely. I mean, I think of it like an incredible oak tree. You need to know about the roots, and the roots go very, very deep. And this is something we heard about from every one of our guests on how important their parents and grandparents and the lessons they learned from them were in their success.
That's right.
You know, whether it was Charles Bronfman and the lessons he learned from his dad. I mean, there's this great story, I still remember it out of his book, and I believe we touch on it in one of the interviews, where his dad writes him a letter on his bar mitzvah. And he's like, well is it to walk amongst kings, but never lose the common touch.
Yeah, this amazing lesson about be ambitious, but remember that
who
like
you are.
Who you are and keep your, you know, like keep your modesty, be humble.
Right. And those roots become very, very important. Or whether it's Izzy Sharp, who talks about how his mother really had such chutzpah and had no doubt, but his father had this incredible charisma, and he inherited both of them and learned from both of them.
Yeah.
And you hear from each one of these guests on, or Eddie Sonshine, right? I mean, how his dad, his work ethic, he comes over with nothing. I mean, nothing.
Do you remember Eddie Sonshine's father was on his honeymoon, I believe?
Yeah.
Right? Do you remember how long?
No, that's Izzy Sharp.
Oh, sorry.
It might as well have been Eddie Sonshine's too. I mean,
Izzy Sharp's mother and father had their honeymoon.
Yes.
And the honeymoon was from 8 a.m. till 9 a.m.
Yeah.
on a Tuesday. And so he said he slept in.
That was his honeymoon.
And that was that. But that type of work ethic, I think, trickles down. And I think this idea of learning from the generation coming before us is such an interesting thing. And I loved hearing these stories. I remember Eddie Sonshine told this story where he's explaining to his father the concept of a real estate investment trust. And he says, Dad, you know, we buy buildings, we raise money. And his dad says, Eddie, that sounds like a good business. And Eddie, even though he'd already, you know, his father wasn't going to help him, but he wanted his father to understand. He wanted to bring his father along on the journey of him building RioCan.
And that's what we're going to learn about here in this Big Shot short. We're going to learn about legacy. We're going to learn about how the roots of each one of these big shots, the lessons that they learned from their parents and from their grandparents, how important they were for them in helping them achieve their success.
Yeah. I want you all to think about this. Behind every one of these big shots are these generations of sort of mini big shots who paved the way so they can build these incredible companies. And that's the case for you and me. The reason we can operate the way we do and build the things we've built is because of our parents and grandparents and the sacrifices they made. And I believe this is gonna resonate with every single one of you. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team in. Started from the bottom, now we here.
We're going to hear from Eddie Sonshine, the founder of RioCan, one of Canada's largest development companies, on how his father taught him that when you pair education with hard work, you get a powerful combination.
You had a paper route when you were 10 years old.
Yes.
By the time you were 12, I think your father told you to go get a summer job.
Yes.
What was that first summer job for you?
Working for him. I couldn't get any other one.
Okay.
So basically, I was an assistant laborer. He was a small home builder. He built 10, 20 houses a year. Actually made a good living doing it. And so I used to be the guy that walked around and, picked up the garbage.
Yeah.
You know, the little pieces of wood that were extra pieces of wood that the carpenter would just leave on the ground and kept the site clean. And I mean, it was very different times. You know, building permits. Yeah. You had a case of Crown Royal in your trunk. The building inspector showed up. My father gave him a bottle.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're talking like the late 50s, early 60s. It was good times, and I did that when I was 12. And I think by the time I was 14, I started getting real jobs.
Lumberyard.
Well, my father got them for me. I mean, yes. You know what? My grandkids want a summer job. They go work somewhere good.
Yeah.
Me, I worked in a lumber yard. I worked in a stone yard one summer.
There is one sort of common theme here, even from an early age, which I think comes from your father potentially, which is hard work.
Right.
Yeah. His thing to me was, look, Eddie, you're pretty smart. Although he once said to me, he said it in Yiddish, but I'll translate it into English. When I was 12 or 13 years old, he said, you know, Eddie, if talking is a profession, you're going to do very well.
I think it is a profession. Isn't that being a lawyer?
So you became a lawyer, yeah.
little did he know, it actually is a profession. But anyway, he told me two things. That number one, I should get as educated as I can possibly get. He said, because you know what? Look, I've lived through it, Eddie. The government, people, they can take away everything you got.
Yeah.
But they can't take away what's in your head unless they kill you. He said they can do that too, but that's the only way they can take away in your head. And if you got to run, if you got to go, whatever's in your head comes with you. So get as educated as you can. I'll do whatever I have to do to pay for it. And he did. And the other thing is being smart, being educated, that's great. But if you don't work hard, it's not great. He said, I know a lot of smart, educated people, both in Poland and here. They never succeed because there's no substitute for hard work, putting in the time, making the effort. There's just no substitute for it. And so my brother and I were taught that. And not just taught that, we saw it. I mean, during what in those days was called construction season. Today, you build all year round. It was basically from like now through to around the end of October. And my dad would leave sort of literally before there was light, so he could be on the job by the time it was light. And he'd come home when it got dark. In the summer, that was like 9:30, 10 o'clock. And then he'd eat dinner.
Wow.
Whenever it was. So I never had dinner with him during the construction season. And in the off season, he was busy getting his next deals ready for the next year. So he just worked all the time.
You're going to hear from Jonathan Weiner, the founder of Canderel. He's going to talk about how when he was 12 years old, he pushed his father and asked for a raise at his work. But talk a bit about your upbringing. You were a kid. You said sort of upper middle class to lower middle class. How did that affect you? How did that sort of instill a sense of security or lack of security in you?
My parents and my grandparents instilled an incredible work ethic in me. I used to play hooky from school so I could do swatches because I would glue the swatches and get $4 a thousand for putting the
textile swatches.
Yeah. on paper. And so
who paid you?
The business did.
Okay.
But cheap labor, right?
Yeah,
right.
Of course.
So I got sick more often than not because I could make $4 a thousand. I had a Gazette route at 11 years old.
Even though you sold textiles, you had a paper route, talk a bit about that work ethic. Where did you see that work ethic? Where did it come from?
I guess it was always a drive to succeed. I watched my dad always undersell himself. He never got the salary increases that he was worth. He eventually sold the business and went over to Scott LaSalle. Mm-hmm. Brought in an army uniform contract, re-engineered the plant, got a six-month payback on it. I don't know, they gave him a $10,000 bonus. I said, Dad, you got to be kidding me. You got to ask for it.
How old were you when he told your dad that he needs to get a raise?
I don't know, 12, 13,
you were 12 years 14. Old telling your father, you got to get a raise.
Yeah. He always seemed to me to underachieve what he was worth for what he did. He was very dedicated, very hardworking. Right. He worked even for Alvin Siegel.
Sure.
It was, I think, his second to last job.
Wow.
But he was always, you know, the kind of guy that you want in terms of concern for your nickels and dimes. So he'd say, I'm going to go deliver this. I said, Dad, for what you're being paid, give it to a courier. Yeah. $5. It's not your obligation. Oh, I don't want the company to spend it.
Amazing loyalty.
But I learned my work ethic from them. My parents did not put me through school.
Wow.
In fact, they made it worse. They charged me rent.
They charged you rent to live at home?
Yeah.
And why is that?
Yeah.
I only found out later it was a forced saving. They gave it back to me when I got married.
But you didn't know at the time?
No.
And so they were trying to create independence, presumably?
Yeah.
And they wanted to instill the value of saving?
We're going to hear from Izzy Sharp, the founder of the Four Seasons. He's going to talk about how his mother's chutzpah and his father's good nature made him the ultimate salesman.
You know, we're born with our own genes and our own skills that come from generations past. But I think it's the nurturing and the nurture which we have and the nature of what, you know, we're born with. And we were fortunate that my parents brought us up like they were brought up, to be self-sufficient. They never asked us or told us what to do. If we went out, they didn't say, where are you going? And when you came back, they didn't say, where were you? It was always the trust of my three sisters and I that we would get by. So we were fortunate to have a supportive upbringing that allowed each of us to, you know, develop our skills, find our way. We were never told what we should become. You grow up as a Jewish child, you're your parents' child.
Yeah.
You know, you follow what they expect you to do, which we did. And they, I think your principles and values that you inherit aren't what parents tell you. It's how they are. It's like osmosis. You learn by example of how they are treating people and how they treat you. Mm-hmm. So that experience of living up to your word, your bond, is important. You know, you make a commitment, you live up to it.
Even if it costs you money.
It cost them for years. They were paying off the debt that they had.
From that first project?
From that first project.
Wow.
And my mother would not, to her, that's what you have to do. You made a mistake.
It's the right thing.
That's it. We'll do it. You know, they both struggled to get to where they were. And you saw that. And I think you're born with a certain self-esteem that they encourage. You know, that's what I mentioned with the nurturing is, you know, they didn't suppress you in your thoughts. Sure. So it built in myself and my sisters, I think, confidence and belief in yourself, because my mother did. I mean, you know, she didn't have the language, but she was certain of her opinion. I mean, there's no doubt. Rosie talked to her.
Sounds familiar, Dave?
Rosie described her as a woman of no self-doubt. You know, she wasn't born here with all the, you know, policies and etiquette. And she could be quite rude. But she had no malice. It wasn't like she was intending to be rude. That was her.
Yeah.
And she was going to speak her mind. And if you didn't like what she said,
it's your problem.
Yeah, but it wasn't with malice.
Yeah.
So you grow up with that principle of, you know, you stand your ground. And my whole life, I've never been intimidated. I've never shied away. And I often wonder, how did I do that? Like today, with a little more maturity. And I said, I have no idea why I had the courage or chutzpah to go up to the most important corporation in the world, ITT, and I think I can make a deal with them? That's ridiculous. But in my mind, hey, it's a good idea. I think they might like to hear about it. So my belief in my ideas, never wavered. I just had a conviction, and I couldn't understand why other people didn't see it. So I think, as you both have done, you believed in what you were doing and gave you the perseverance to overcome the skeptics and the difficulties, because you could see the end. It's got to work. I will find a way to make this work. Oh. I'm a good salesman. I know that. I make a good first impression, and I never disappoint. So I live up to what I say, and I can be a charming partner.
Yeah.
So I've been able to make very good business relations that exist to this day. So I could make a good business deal. So it's just, I think, a personality trait, combination of my mother and my father. My mother's chutzpah, which gives me the confidence and belief, and my father's good nature.
Yeah.
Always, always nice to be around, always positive, always never a negative word out of his mouth. So I think that combination of a personality has allowed me to make good impressions.
Yeah.
So it's been a part of my DNA.
We're gonna hear from Charles Bronfman, who's famous not just for bringing the Expos to Montreal, but also his family starting Seagram's, which is the makers of Crown Royal, on how his father taught him, when you make a deal, always leave something on the table.
Well, the way our family worked, and by the way, it was only Shabbat evening, Friday night, and Sundays.
Yeah.
We sat at the big table in the big dining room, as opposed to eating in the breakfast room where the kids ate. And my father sat at the head of the table, naturally. I sat on his right, my brother sat on his left. And normally the girls would sit there, but for some reason that's the reason. And he would talk homespun advice, and homespun little jibs and jabs. He would say, I remember one of them, if you're going to do a deal, always leave something on the table. Because if you don't, you squeeze too hard, you'll do the deal, but you'll never do another one with that person.
Which is not conventional wisdom. Usually conventional wisdom is you take as much as you can get.
Yeah. And he liked to teach us a humanistic approach to things. Because don't forget, he may have been a great businessman, and he may have been tougher than nails, but when it got to Jewish philanthropy and philanthropy general, well, philanthropy general, he was always very conscious that he had been called a bootlegger. Whether he was or not, I don't know. I never wanted to know one way or the other, and I couldn't have cared less. That stuck to him, and the Jewish business stuck to him. So when it went to general philanthropy, he was pretty shy. When it came to Jewish philanthropy, he was the Lord Master in Canada. And so he was of several compartments. With me, he was very sweet and very kind. And he used to come in when I was going to bed, and he'd play what he called tollies. This little piggy went to market. So I never ever felt his wrath. But I was always scared that I might.
Yeah.
He knew everything.
He knew everything.
I remember one time, there was a very nice guy, his name was Hank Collingwood.
Hank
Collingwood.
It's a good name.
It's strong.
He came from Newfoundland. He was our agent for Seagram in Newfoundland. And he comes to Newfoundland would have been 0.1% of Seagram's business.
Sure. Most of it was in the US by this point.
Yeah, and Canada was around 9%.
Okay.
And
this is a small province in Canada.
In Canada, and the bulk of the alcohol sold there was something called Screech. Screech was rum based, and I don't know whatever else was in it. And Collingwood comes in; he's our agent, and Dad has nothing in front of him. And he said to Collingwood, "How's XYZ brand doing?" Well, Mr. Sam, he starts looking. And then how's, and Dad knew the numbers. He knew the numbers of every single brand, even if it sold, you know, a tiny little amount. He knew it all. He knew his business backwards, forwards. And I used to ask him, Dad, you spend 2 days a week in Montreal, or 1 day a week in Montreal. You spend the rest of the week in New York. How the hell do you figure out Canada sales and U.S. sales? He said, son, it's very simple. I add a zero or I subtract.
We're going to hear from Aldo Bensadoun, the founder of Aldo Shoes, on how integrity and the desire to be fair was taught to him by his father and how that was one of the pillars in building his company.
You care about business, but you also deeply care about your people and integrity. And I'm wondering how much of that came from, like, where did that come from? Was it your family that taught you that? Like, where did that sense of, I can build good things and I can do it in a good way?
I think it came from my mom and my dad. I mean, you know, like, I remember in Morocco, we had, you know, like, my mom was always very, very kind, and my dad also, you know, with the people, with local people. And I guess it came from there. And also from the desire to be fair, to be just. You know, like, you know, I remember Trudeau saying, let's create a just society, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, like, all of us, you know, we were socially minded, but we were capitalist, yeah. but socially minded, if you want. And I think it's that fairness, that desire to do good, to be a good human being, if you want. Basically, to continue, you know, like what we started as a company, because today it's not me anymore. I mean, yes, I am the sole shareholder, but all the people, you know, that work in the company are the one, you know, that make that company. And I think what's beautiful is to see in Saudi Arabia, you know, like coming to visit us to buy shoes, and they sitting at the same table as Israel or as, you know, whatever, you mm-hmm. know, and so they talking and, you know, and then, so what I'm proud is the fact of seeing, you know, like the way colleagues and employees in Saudi or in Dubai or wherever, or in, you know, Philippines are treating their coworker inside their store in the same way as the way we treat them, with love, respect, and integrity. That way of treating human being in different part of the world, to me, makes the world a better place.
And that's the same way your father treated his employees
exactly.
in 1930 exactly. in Morocco.
Exactly, exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
It's an amazing
and
thing.
And I am a strong believer that really, you really grow, you stand on the shoulder of your past and of your family. Sure. I really do believe that.
And that's why Big yeah. Shot exists. We've been standing on the shoulders of giants like yours for a long time as we've sort of built our families and our businesses. Mm-hmm. And we are so grateful that you joined us for this this archival. Started from the bottom, now the whole team. Yeah, I didn't keep it real from the jump. Living at my mama's house, we'd argue every month. I was trying to get it on my own.